We made this.
This modern hospital may seem worlds apart from the days of ancient sorcerers, but for psychiatrist Stephen Strange and his beautiful patient, this is where those worlds collide, and the nightmare begins.
We're here interviewing the founder of the LeFay Method, a woman who in the last few days seems to have taken at least a part of New York City by storm, so to speak. Here to tell us more about it is the force behind the LeFay Method, Morgan LeFay. Ms. LeFay, can you tell us just what it is exactly that the method does?
Quite simply, it unlocks the hidden potential within you. It's a way of realizing your own powers and using them to get what you really want out of life.
There was an old man and pushed him over a railing in front of a car.
Nothing Stephen Strange learned in medical school could prepare him for an attack by an evil sorceress from the fourth dimension. A villainess who can only be stopped by an earthly master of the mystic arts.
Come in.
Thank you.
You're telling me you're a sorcerer.
I came here to try to help a patient of mine.
Come and take him into our domain.
Now it's up to Stephen Strange to take the place of the Earth's last sorcerer.
Have I become the sorcerer?
You should learn whose powers to respect.
Come along for a fantastic adventure into the fourth dimension with Dr. Strange.
Hello and welcome to Podcast 616, a podcast about Marvel films on the We Made This podcast network. I'm your host, Mark Adams, and in this episode, we are doing one of our TAT episodes. We've been kind of calling these gently when Marvel was TAT, but I think that's actually a little bit unfair. We're looking at Doctor Strange, but we're not looking at Doctor Strange from the late 10s. I don't even know what to call them. 10s. We're looking at 1978 TV pilot Doctor Strange. And as a bonus, we're also having a look at Dr. Mordred, which was Full Moon Productions' attempt at a Doctor Strange film after they lost their license. But we'll explain all of this as we go along. The 1978 Doctor Strange film featured a pretty unknown actor with a nice tash playing Doctor Strange in a show that was supposed to be the pilot for a continuous series. It was inspired by the Spider-Man and Incredible Hulk series that had been actually quite successful at that point at the late 70s. And it was quite psychedelic and much more fun than I personally think people give it credit for. Joining me to discuss this is my guest and co-host from Chucky Vision, our podcast about the Chucky franchise, Devon Elson. Hello, Dev.
Hey, everyone. It's exciting to be here. You know, I love comics. I've watched a lot of superhero movies. It's a great pleasure to be here.
Well, yeah, this is actually your first appearance on Podcast 616. It's not your first appearance alongside me because we do that a lot, but I thought it'd be fun to have alongside me for a couple of these because looking at TAT, you are a fan of the TAT, are you not?
Oh, absolutely. And I've watched a lot of the Marvel TAT. You know, people have to remember if people have only been fans of Marvel for the last, you know, 10, 15 years or so. I mean, a lot of people grew up with, you know, Sam Raimi, Spider-Man and stuff, or X-Men, or even Blade. You know, from the millennium, Marvel movies were looking much better, but there were decades beforehand of Marvel attempting to get onto TV and onto cinemas, and it took them a long while to get the formula right.
Yeah, I think when you were watching these kind of films, this was what you expected it to be forever until we got something like Spider-Man. And so tell me a little bit about your background when it comes to comic books. Are you a big Marvel fan? Do you read a lot of comics?
Yeah, I definitely, because we're getting into some TAT, I want to start positive, you know, to show that I really do enjoy all this. I do love comics. I love all kinds of comics. Marvel, DC, Dark Horse, Valiant, Boom, 2000 AD. I know you love that as well.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, that's how you prove you love these days. You just list everything you know.
Well, you know, you and I also love Innovation Comics. That's for another podcast.
And yeah, I really do love all kinds of Marvel. You know, I read all the modern stuff, like I know it's just called Four, but the, you know, the Lady Four run of Jane Foster in those comics is really good. Miss Marvel with Kamala Khan, I really liked. Skrill, I can't even say the word for some reason. Skrill Girl was a fantastic comic. You know, there's some really good comics these days coming out from Marvel. But I also love older comics as well. I really do love Spider-Man. And I can say I've read Spider-Man from every decade, because they're all good. I mean, even I've read the whole 2-year run of Clone Saga, and I quite enjoyed that storyline.
I didn't hate it as much as other people do, but...
I mean, in the long run, none of it makes any sense, but I thought comic to comic, it's actually quite a fun ride.
Yeah, yeah, that's probably fair.
I mean, in terms of, you know, runs and, you know, issue-to-issue stuff, I mean, if you want to look at the peak of Spider-Man, you know, Spider-Man at his best, look no further than the very start. I mean, 1963, Amazing Spider-Man. And I hate the comparison, but it really was like the Beatles of comics books. And going all the way back to the first issue of Amazing Spider-Man is like watching the Get Back documentary. I mean, Stan Lee and Steve Ditko, they hit the nail on the head immediately. They just, those first few issues, and you know, Romita Sr. came in after Ditko dipped out after a while. But like, yeah, the start of that is so goddamn fantastic and really paved the way for how good comics could be after that. So yeah, I mean, it's no wonder why when you read those and then you watch like Sam Raimi's Spider-Man and you think like, oh wow, these movies are so inspired from the old comics from the 60s. And that just shows how influential they are. And, you know, using that as a segue to go on to the movies and the MCU. Yeah, they're all right, aren't they? It's all a bit of fun, isn't it?
Yeah, I think there's definitely something about the MCU that they've hit their stride so perfectly. And I almost don't want a podcast about things that are perfect. So that's why I started doing this run of tat films and tat telly that we're looking at. And this one that we're looking at today is Doctor Strange. What is your general opinion of Doctor Strange as a character?
As a character, I really like him. I mean, yeah, unless I'm mixing him up with Kirby. But no, I think, yeah, Ditko. Yeah, Ditko was a big hand on the early Strange comics. And right from the get-go, those comics are insane. Like, the kaleidoscope, really hippy-dippy energy of those comics are really good. And, you know, he also wrote stuff like, you know, The Eternals and stuff. And those comics are crazy back in the day. And, I'm a little bit disappointed with, like, some of the new movies, you know, like the 2016 Doctor Strange or the new Eternals and stuff, because they're really not as weird as the comics were.
No, they almost convert it to like being cool and modern from its original intent, don't they?
Yeah, it's definitely that four quadrant, you know, approach, isn't it? Like, you've got to appease everyone, and by appeasing everyone, you can't be too weird. But, I mean, I think a lot of the new Doctor Strange was decent. I think they definitely did throw a lot of that kaleidoscope energy into it.
Mm.
Not so much with this Doctor Strange movie.
Well, I think for me, Doctor Strange is a character I always enjoyed guesting around other characters. His power level was too powerful for me. I've always been a bigger fan of the street level kind of characters. Spider-Man is about as powerful as I like. I'm not interested in Superman or Thor, or I like Daredevil and anything on that level, which is why I got on better with the Netflix shows than I actually got on with some of the super high-powered films that we have in the MCU. And Doctor Strange was always someone who turned up when it needed a power level. And so he wasn't one I was hugely into, but I liked it when he turned up, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I guess it's more a question of acting or whatever. I'm not a huge fan of Cumberbatch. You know, he was fine in the Doctor Strange movie, but I did find him a lot more likable and interesting in the Spider-Man movie. So yeah, maybe you are right that some of these characters are more interesting when they're guesting. It's like, I know, it's like the Hulk in 4-3. I mean, how many times can we retell the Hulk story?
Yeah.
It's kind of just more entertaining if you have him as a side character. Not that there's Hulk comics that haven't been, you know, explored and stuff. There's plenty of Hulk stories still to go.
Yeah. But I think that's something they've done really, really well in the MCU is the kind of guest appearances and supporting roles for characters that could and maybe should be considered major characters. So, yeah, perhaps when he turns up in the comics like that, you've got a point that when he turns up in the films like that, Strange is kind of cooler rather than in his own films. Should we have a chat about the one from 1978, though?
Yeah, it tries. I guess you could say, you know, it gives it the old college try.
So it was actually a film pilot. It wasn't ever a cinematic release. It was a feature-length film that was designed to be the first episode of a TV show. So it was very much establishment of what they were trying to do with the show and what they would like to do in future if they were to get a series from it. And it was released 10 days before I was born in 1978. It was released on the 6th of September 1978, and it didn't do well. And it turns out that a lot of that is blamed on the fact that it was up against an incredibly successful and popular program in the schedule called Roots.
Do you
feel like blaming Roots on why this didn't get picked up is fair, or was it a bit shit?
It was a bit shit, yeah. And we'll get into it. We'll get into the plot and the characters and stuff. But essentially, it just didn't have the same spark that the Incredible Hulk show had. The Hulk show worked so well because it basically shamelessly ripped off the Fugitive TV show. It was just that.
A little.
It was just that, except the Fugitive could turn into the Hulk now and again.
Mm.
And that worked in its favor because it was a TV format that audiences could get along with. Whereas here, it's just, I don't know what this show would be episode to episode.
Yeah, it does feel a bit like that. The opening, for example, it's just fluff. You know when you like have something at the start of a film and it tells you what's going on? That's normally really, really important, perhaps in something like Star Wars or whatever. This was just bloody pointless. However, the theme was pretty cool. I quite liked the theme. Very 70s, but...
Yeah, I noted the theme. People look it up. But the film immediately starts with this really strong, like, metallic guitar twang. And I was like, hang on. This sounds exactly like Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan.
Oh.
I looked it up, and it wasn't James Horner who did Star Trek II, but it was Paul Chihara. And Paul Chihara tutored James Horner. And James Horner, his first movie was Star Trek II. So he bloody stole this from his teacher.
Oh. Inspired by Dev.
It's the same sound, identical.
It's not. It's close.
But the rest of the music in this film is actually pretty decent. I really love some of the... It's got some real, like, you know, I guess it's 70s, but, you know, proto-80s synth stuff. And, you know, there's a real wailing guitar in there. It's cool.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think the soundtrack... It's undeniably 70s, but I like that. And I think that they did seem to care about the music in this film, which is something that you should credit it for before we absolutely tear it to pieces. I will defend this film, but, you know, I always defend Tat. And this, I do think that to say that it's terrible ignores fact like they really seemed to care about the soundtrack as an example, but there's other stuff as well. Some of the, you know, perfect example, they cast Jessica Walter and she's brilliant and fit.
She is really fun in this movie, and the ending suggests that she would be in the TV show as like a recurring villain, so that would have been really fun to see.
She looks fabulous and she's actually a very good actor. And good. They seemed to care enough to cast someone worthwhile, at least.
Well, and then there's Doctor Strange.
I mean, Peter Hooton, his look is good for Doctor Strange. It's good casting physically.
I looked him up and he was in about five things, including this. And
there you go.
You say his look, he kind of looks like a white Lionel Richie. It's an odd look. It's a very 70s look.
Yeah, but he's got the tash going on. It's Doctor Strange-y. And then, you know, credit where credit's due. I mean, it's the wrong East Asian, but they cast an East Asian person as Wong. And in 1978, you were likely to get someone who was white made to look like someone who was East Asian in a role like that. So credit where credit's due. Clyde Kusatsu, Japanese actor, he looked the part, and it wasn't the perfect casting because Wong is Chinese, but it's still better than a white guy.
Yeah, and like Jessica Walter, I did like his acting. I thought he was really nice in this. He came across as like a warm helper, and
yeah,
I would have liked to see him in a show. I mean, we're praising the Asian casting, but and this film is so weird. A film in the 70s did the same thing as a film in 2016, where the ancient one is just allowed to be some white person.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure that Linma is supposed to be the ancient one.
I mean, he's filling that role, though.
He is, but it's a completely new character created for the TV series, I'd argue. Like, almost like a mentor character for Doctor Strange. Yeah, I get what you mean.
Yeah, I guess he isn't the same one, because he's the prior Sorcerer Supreme.
Yeah, true, but I don't think he's supposed to be the ancient one. I don't think...
No, I don't think they ever do name him that, yeah.
No. And the character of Clea was actually inspired by a character from the comics that was a protege of Doctor Strange later on.
You don't really get that in the movie. I mean, you get that she's like a former... You know, she's a lover of Doctor Strange and... Yeah, she's sort of a sidekick. But in the comics, she's like a full-on like sorcerer. Like,
yeah, she's badass.
Yeah, she is badass. And I would hope that's where the TV show would go. In the pilot, she's just sort of there. She's very much a damsel in distress for most of it.
Oh, yeah. But what's that test? I don't think she would pass it.
The Bechdel test, yeah.
That one, yeah. I don't think she'd pass that. It would be nice to know whether or not the intention was to flesh out the character a bit more than just plot device woman and actually head towards what she became in the comics. But we'll never know, because, funnily enough, this film did not garner a television series.
Yeah.
I do feel like it's cast well. I really do feel like it's cast well. Even Peter Hooton has got the look, and he's not diabolical.
No, he's not terrible. Maybe some of the like dubbing in this, especially, and because it's set in a hospital setting for half of it, it really reminded me of Garth Marenghi's Dark Place.
Right, I've not seen that, so you'll have to explain to me.
Oh, it's just a total like parody of like 70s, you know, like really cheesy B movie horror stuff, and it definitely had that feel. You know, the really strong dubbing. He has that very masculine 70s, like hello,
yeah. Yeah, so like, do you mean like the post-production additional dubbing? ADR, is it called?
Additional ADR.
Dialogue recording? Yeah, that was quite obvious here. But again, we are 43 years in the future. I don't feel like the people making this film thought, you know what? In 43 years, they might take the piss out of the ADR. I don't feel like we're being fair to these films to some extent by shredding them to pieces and comparing them to modern films. I think, in a way, I'm going to defend these films for what they are rather than what we're comparing them to, you know?
I will say the characters and stuff, there's a big difference in this between modern, like MCU stuff, because we have the main villain of Morgan Le Fay, who is a character from Robin Hood?
Well, she's more Arthurian.
Arthurian, that's it.
So in a similar way to Thor, you can just immediately use these characters like the Marvel Universe regularly does. Thor, Hercules, and Morgan Le Fay. These are all kind of like out of copyright characters. And DC do the same, you know. All these characters that you don't need a license for do tend to pop up in various comic books.
But what I mean is, You do get those in the comic books and stuff, but like, this is the movie, you know, this is the grand introduction of Doctor Strange to TV audiences. And in the MCU now, you know, if they're doing something like Spider-Man, you gotta get Green Goblin. And in the Doctor Strange movie, you know, you got Mordo, you got Calicus, you got Dormammu. You know, you've got all the big villains that everyone knows from the comics. And in this one, you know, if you look at a list of like, you know, if you go on Wikipedia for Doctor Strange, he has a list of known enemies. Morgan Le Fay is not there.
No, that is a fair cop.
It reminds me of like the Supergirl movie, how outside of Supergirl, there's no real like DC characters in there. She just fights a woman who wants to be a witch. And it's like, well, why are you just making up a plot? Just read some of the comics and pick some bad guys from there.
Morgan Le Fay does appear in the comics, and she has had an issue with Doctor Strange. But you're right. She's way down the list compared to characters like Dormammu or Mordo. And I don't know. I still think it worked quite nicely. I think a lot of it helps that Jessica Walter was fabulous. Did I mention that Jessica Walter is fabulous? And yeah, I didn't have a problem with Morgan Le Fay being the main antagonist, because I think it worked.
It did work. It just, you know, I don't know why you couldn't have that character be like the Enchantress or something.
True. And they did immediately change what Doctor Strange does for a job, just for the plot of this pilot. The plot being, obviously, that Clea was having some mental health problems. So he was a psychiatrist. He was a surgeon in the comics. And that was an incredibly important point about the fact that he lost the usage of his hands. They just got rid of that.
Yeah, I wonder. Yeah, that seems to be that's a weird story decision to remove all of that. And I don't know if they would have that in like episode 2 or something, but it makes him a lot more of a passive character in this. Like, you get a lot of this backstory of Morgan talking to some weird demon fella in hell, I guess. And then you've got like the old Sorcerer Supreme talking about how Linmer, he has to pass on his powers to this new guy. And this new guy
lot of Linmer. There's probably too much Linmer, if we're being brutally honest. He survives longer than you'd expect him to.
And you get all of this, and it's like, all of this rests on this new character, Stephen Strange. And he didn't, like, engage in any of this. He's just a guy that has destiny thrust upon him.
Yeah, you're right. I want to talk about Linmer a little bit. Some of his mind tricks aren't particularly moral, and he's the good guy. I think consent was a little bit less sophisticated in the 70s. I don't think that that was intentional, that he was doing stuff that's a bit yicky. But I do feel like it's worth pointing out that I don't think you'd get away with some of the stuff that Linmer does, involving, you know, mind tricks and going inside people's heads in a modern interpretation.
It's definitely an awkward way of doing it. He has to sort of, when he's getting in just to see Clea, he has to do that on like 3 different people just to get there.
Yeah.
And he's the Sorcerer Supreme. There must be easier ways of doing that.
And I think there is a difference between Linmer doing arguably non-consensual stuff as the good guy, and the invasion of dreams by Morgan. She's the bad guy. It's okay for her to do bad things. But I don't see much difference between invading someone's dreams and scaring them, and getting in someone's head to manipulate them to do what you want. I think they're both pretty similar, actually.
Yeah. I mean, I suppose he doesn't have characters do anything too amoral. As I say, he really is just sort of he's basically doing that Jedi mind trick.
Which I also have a problem with. That was made in the 70s as well.
But it's just a very quick and cheap way of being like, I need to get through here, so let me through. And they're just like, okay. And then he just walks by him. It just seems like, I don't know. I mean, just have him walk in. You don't need that.
Yeah. But if we're talking about what was okay in the 70s. Cuban heels and flares, man. I'm all about them. Some of the outfits in this were magnificent and I want them.
Yeah, I mean, so, yeah, some of them were really fancy. Wasn't it odd how, I guess we'll have to talk about it, but like, it takes a while for Doctor Strange to become Doctor Strange as we know him. And I felt it was really odd how near the end of the movie, in the weird dream sequence where Morgan is trying to seduce him, she puts him in the Doctor Strange outfit. And that's our first look at Doctor Strange.
I know. And it was about 20 minutes to go at that point. I think you're right. That is a fair criticism. And I think I maybe touched on it earlier. There's too much Linma. Linma is the star for at least half of this film, where Doctor Strange is kind of like a petulant child. And that doesn't seem like a sophisticated way to deal with it, with hindsight.
Yeah, I don't know why this necessarily needed to be a feature-length pilot. Because, yeah, the Linma stuff is dragged out way too long. And it takes ages for Doctor Strange to even engage in any of this. I think for like half the film, he is just a literal doctor.
Yeah, exactly that. And if that was the focus, that they were going to maybe do a kind of like dual responsibility thing where I'm the Sorceress Supreme, but I'm also a doctor and I've got to balance that life. Maybe that's what they were kind of hinting at.
I guess.
Be the crux of this teleseries.
It was definitely not the struggle that Spider-Man faces, because we get that return to the medical world at the end. And he just walked in on a meeting and everyone's like, "You're late, Doctor Strange." And he's like, "Whatever."
Yeah. And so we've skipped to the end. Why not? The ending's really fucking odd. He doesn't seem remotely arsed about the return of Morgan, who nearly killed him. And he seems more interested in dating and dicking around with other magicians. And it just felt like just shit on the whole film. Did you not think?
It's a very odd ending. I mean, there's so little action in this in terms of what you would expect. Like, the Doctor Strange movie, you have big sequences. You know, you have him fighting Kyla Kiss's henchmen and going through all the doors and dimensions and stuff, and you have like a low point where he loses and then he has to fight back. You have him going to Dormammu and stuff. In this, the confrontation between Strange and Morgan, he just like, he falls over into a web, gets out of it, and then like shoots one beam at her and she's gone.
Yeah,
I think in total of this entire film, Doctor Strange uses about 3 spells.
Yeah, so there were a lot of effects in this film, and it does seem like they weren't mucking about, and they were putting in some good special effects for the time. But you're right, none of it was focused on whether or not they were actually his powers. It was more like stuff like the trippy astral plane. The astral plane. Did that remind you of the early Doctor Who theme where they had all the whirly shit on the telly?
I was waiting for my moment. I was going to say, at one point, Doctor Strange falls into the old credits of Doctor Who.
I'm glad it's not just me who thought that.
It very much seems like the exact way that they did those opening credits.
Yeah, and you know, that the opening to Doctor Who was trippy, and the whole Doctor Strange thing is supposed to be psychedelic and trippy, but you do wonder if they nicked it.
I think it was definitely the same effect. And, you know, it was kind of cool watching him fly around in there. I guess that's kind of, they were getting at what the comics were like and stuff. But then again, like the battles, like this battle with Morgan. You have a battle with, one of the random demons that come in. I've written the name somewhere, but your Balzeroth. You get Balzeroth and Amadeus. You get all these random name drops of demons that are in it for like a minute. Balzeroth is this God of War kind of like fully armored up demon on a horseback, and he comes riding into the dream dimension like, "I'm going to take this woman." And then Doctor Strange's spell is just like, "Go away." And then he turns around and leaves. That's it. That's the spell.
Right, but again, they got a fucking horse. There was some money behind this. There wasn't any good writing, but there was some money behind this.
The weird thing is, I'm thinking now, and again, we're skipping around crazily, but when Morgan infiltrates the house, the whatever you call it, the Doctor Strange mansion,
Sanctum.
Sanctum, that's it. And her and Linma are like shooting laser beams at each other. Does that fight go on longer than her actual fight with Doctor Strange?
Yes, it does.
Oh my God.
I know, right? Yeah, there are some flaws in this film. But I won't have it. This was fun. Would you say you actually enjoyed watching this film?
There were times where I was, I guess because of modern standards, I was like sort of like looking at the time thinking, what is happening with this plot? You know, where is act one, act two, act three? Like, what is happening? But moment to moment, yeah, it is enjoyable. There's a charm to the tap. Like, I love how whenever they do these little battles and stuff, and this happens multiple times with Linma and Doctor Strange, but they'll have a battle, and then they'll fall over, and then the other character will be like, I'll tuck him into bed. Heroes in this movie have to, like, take naps after their battles, and that's charming.
I mean, good. I mean, there is a lot of problematic stuff. I would say even more than the Linma's mind tricks. Mm. I am still a woman and the man attracted me. I mean, for fuck's sake. Is this really her motivation, that he's hot? And the ultimate punishment for a woman is being made, and I quote, old and barren. Really?
Yeah. It's really? Yeah, it's definitely old school writing, like. It's odd because it doesn't seem to affect her character that much. I mean, in both those examples, like the I am still a woman and the man attracted me, her plot to seduce him and get his power through that. I mean, you could have that without this apparent weakness to the male, because I mean, exactly. She's not even undone by that weakness, because then he just zaps her anyway.
True.
And the old thing is weird, because it's like, oh no, she failed. She's going to be made like into this old hag. But then at the end, she's fine.
Yeah, so she's very briefly an old woman, but it's very badly predicted. Having seen Jessica Walter before she died, she was still looking great. 70s and 80s, not like the period of time, but in her 70s and 80s, Jessica Walter looked fucking great. When she was doing Archer and Arrested Development, she was the Blues, the main one of the main characters, wasn't she? She was one of the Blues. She looked brilliant. She didn't look like whatever the fuck they made her up to look like in
Yeah.
But I guess, again, that's comparisons for things that simply didn't exist compared to the way you can age and de-age people in modern filmmaking. They could have done so much more with someone like Jessica Walter as the actor. And it just cheapened it a little bit, I think.
Yeah, I think the emphasis on a little bit, because I don't think it was a weird and awkward line, but I don't think it did detract from her character. It didn't affect her plot.
Mm.
And there were really cool moments, you know, when she infiltrates the Sanctum. You know,
yes.
There's a real sense that she isn't just, you know, a pawn of this demon. I don't think they even name him, just this demon in hell. She isn't just a pawn. She's like a really powerful sorceress in her own right.
Mm. I do think she is the best thing about this film by a long way. I quite liked some of the trippy special effects, the Doctor Who thing. That was fun. But by a long way, she is the best thing about this film.
Yeah. And I love her plan was they've had 500 years to defeat the Sorcerer Supreme. And then it's very odd. Like the demon gives her 3 days to kill an old man, which seems like a lot of leeway to kill an old man. And then her plan is to get inside the mind of Clea, who is this random woman walking by on the street. And then Clea just pushes him off a bridge.
Yeah, it was a bit naff, wasn't it?
I just love that that's all it takes.
Yeah, thinking about it, she did an incredible job, really, with what she was given. To some extent, I do feel like the women were just there for the dads watching on a Saturday afternoon. There were some unnecessarily booby dresses as well.
Mm, yeah. Yeah, there was a dress where, near the end, that Morgan Le Fay was in, where it was just like, because it's TV, they do a lot of shots of like close-ins on faces and stuff.
Mm.
But then they were like a wide shot, And she's wearing this incredible plunging V-neck dress.
Clea had a very booby dress at one point as well. And it's like, that's just in there for the dads. It's the most 70s thing. And this is the most 70s thing I've seen for a long time, this film. And there are things that I love about the 70s, like the Cuban heels. And there are things that I don't love about the 70s, like exploitation of women and not very good characters for women and booby dresses. So, you know, it's just... I'll tell you one thing that I really did like. There was a line in this that made me go, oh! I always seem to spot at least one line in something that kind of like grabs me by the throat. And it's from Wong. I can believe it's not raining outside and leave my umbrella in the closet, but that won't stop me getting wet.
Yeah, that was a good line from him.
It's magnificent. It's absolutely magnificent.
And I guess they didn't have to over-explain it, but there was a good explanation that I think Dr. Strange just didn't, like, he was like, look, I don't believe in magic. And I feel like that's when Wong needed to, you know, expand on that and be like, dude, like, there are actively people trying to kill you.
But it does feel like that line can be ever so slightly changed to talk to, I don't know, let's be a bit topical, anti-vaxxers. And it's like, I can believe that I'm not going to get the virus because it's a hoax and not get the vaccine, but that won't stop me being ill. You know, you can adapt the way of the phraseology to, it's just so nicely done. And for something like that to be in a film that perhaps didn't have the strongest dialogue, it really struck me, you know?
Yeah, it was a good line from Wong. I would have liked to see more of him.
Wong was actually really cool. I really liked him. And like you said earlier, that the actor did the role justice as well. Shall we talk about the main protagonist being a massive dog and shagging the seductress when he was on a date with another girl?
He was kind of under an influence. It's unclear how much the influence is.
Exactly. And he doesn't feel any guilt about it afterwards. It's not acknowledged that he was either violated or made a decision that was really doggy. And it's not made explicit either way. And surely it should have been.
Yeah, I mean, that's the 70s writing for you, isn't it? She was a temptress, so she was the bad guy. And he was the good guy. And there's no moral ambiguity to it.
Don't, Dev.
I'm not excusing it. I'm just saying that's how it was back then.
Yeah. And also, Doctor Strange has been around for a hot minute, whereas Wong has been training for his entire life. And it's Doctor Strange that becomes the Sorcerer Supreme over Wong. There's your white privilege right there. It's just, there's a lot about this film that is 70s. So 70s. I did love it, though. I'd watch this film again and again. It's fun. It's daft. It's got Jessica Walter being camp. It's got trippy shit going on. It's got something about it is charming. And I would have loved to have seen more episodes of this. Do you feel the same?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't know how long it would have lasted, but, you know, I mean, there's no reason for it not to have existed. I would have loved at least one season just to see where it could have gone. Because, I mean, as a TV format, what was it going to be like? One half wizards, one half medical drama?
Well, yeah. I suppose. Because we'll never know, unfortunately.
Because, I mean, he doesn't really do much medical stuff. Despite being in the hospital for half the film, he does not do much in-depth medical stuff.
No, he was hardly House, was he?
No, and that's what I mean. I can't imagine the show getting into that, him actually, like, solving patients' cases whilst also battling wizards.
I mean, that's the spin-off from Diagnosis Murder that I would have loved. Oh, Dick Van Dyke, I love him. They should have cast Dick Van Dyke as Doctor Strange.
He had the mustache, Diagnosis Murder. He could have done it.
He could. Dick Van Dyke. Love him. Don't know how we got onto Dick Van Dyke, but we'll move on. Is there actually anything else you want to say about this Doctor Strange film?
I think we blitzed for it pretty effectively. As I say, I enjoyed it. I would suggest people watch it. It's a very quick and easy watch. There really isn't much to it. But what there is to it is it's good fun.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. And I think my fondness of Tat only goes so far. And I did enjoy this. So, yeah, give it a watch and see what we could have maybe had. But we're not just looking at Doctor Strange. We are looking at Dr. Mordred. Now, Dr. Mordred is an odd addition to this. Because our friends at Full Moon Studios, infamous for low-budget horror films, got the license to Doctor Strange. They dithered, and they wrote a script, but didn't get to start filming until their license ran out. But what they did was they were like, well, we're just going to call it Dr. Mordred, and we're going to release it anyway.
I think people nowadays are like, how did these companies afford the rights? And it's like, for a while, Marvel was bankrupt. They were giving the rights away.
And that's the thing. Full Moon are absolutely notorious. I was, even at Marvel's lowest point, I was surprised that Full Moon got a license for a Marvel product. But that does show you, and I don't feel like this is disrespectful to Full Moon, they're on a similar level to Troma. And that does show you that just how close Marvel was to complete bankruptcy and being gone, if they were that desperate that they were allowing the makers of Puppet Master to have the rights to Doctor Strange.
But money-wise, it makes sense. We talked about the history of Full Moon over on our sister podcast, Chucky Vision. And money-wise, you know, these guys knew the direct-to-video market. They knew how to make enough money from that to get more stuff produced.
Yeah.
So at the very least, you know, Marvel assumed that this was going to make some money.
Yeah, and I think you're right. The direct-to-video was what they were looking for at the time. It was released in 1992, which was kind of pretty close to the height of Marvel's absolute mess. Maybe a little earlier than that. But yeah, Full Moon had run profit again and again and again on straight to video stuff. And there was no interest in the 90s in making Marvel Comics into a cinematic film, so perhaps it was a wise choice.
And spoilers for some of the other Marvel Tat movies, but you know, we're going to talk the Captain America movies from the 90s, and I would say this is not one of the worst Marvel movies of this era by far.
No, and I think it's a nice tight 74 minutes, so for me, anything less than an hour isn't a film. So it's still at least a film, even if it's a short one. And it stars Jeffrey Combs. And I love Jeffrey Combs. He's always good value. He's not the best actor in the world. But you know what you're getting with Jeffrey Combs, don't you?
Yeah, he is fantastic. And I actually have some really good things to say about him in this film. I think quite a bit of the acting in this is... It's fun. Weirdly, I feel like some of this film feels like the pilot to a TV show.
Yes, I thought the same. More so than Doctor Strange from 1978.
It has that feel of, even though it's meant to be a movie, it has that sort of budgetary feel of like X-Files and Buffy.
Yes, it does.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind watching some of these, especially some of these actors playing these characters. I wouldn't mind watching some more of this.
I'm genuinely surprised they didn't do more of this. They created their own franchise, essentially. And Full Moon are notorious for milking their franchises. So why didn't we see a Jeffrey Combs, Dr. Mordred, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, The Revenge, Electric Boogaloo? Why didn't we see that?
It must have been a disappointment or some kind of, like, Marvel.
Or expensive.
Yeah, because... They Full Moon also do like behind the scenes stuff. They're very good at doing behind the scenes coverage for all their movies. And in it, the actors are like, we can't wait to do Dr. Mordred 2. We'd love to do it again. So like everyone involved was happy to do more. It just, I guess, just didn't happen.
Fascinating. Another perfect casting was Brian Thompson.
Also known as that bad guy from the 90s.
Well, exactly that. He was in Buffy, Charmed, X-Files, Star Trek, and he was even Shao Kahn in Mortal Kombat Annihilation. He's brilliant. He's never going to be the best actor, but he's just perfect in his look and, you know, in interviews with the fella. He's like, yeah, yeah, I know the kind of roles I'm going for. I'm never going to play Shakespearean characters. Then, well, why do I need to? I make money from this. He's self-aware and great at being campy big guy baddie.
Exactly. It's the exact right tone of like good bad in this. I mean, there's you get those scenes of him and Jeffrey acting across each other, you know, yelling lines like, why do you care about these humans? I'm going to destroy the world. And then Jeffrey's like, it's my duty to defend Earth. And, you know, all these hokey fantasy lines and stuff, but they give it enough conviction where it's charming.
I agree. And I think you've hit something there with the fact that they're both aliens. It essentially means that they can get away with this being a Doctor Strange film if they make them both aliens.
It is both quite accurate to Doctor Strange and at times not.
Yeah, it's so... We did say it felt like a TV pilot, but do you also feel that it was R-rated just for the sake of?
Yeah, I didn't know when we were going to get to this, but yes, it is very much almost a family-friendly superhero movie, you know, with Doctor Strange. Yeah. And then randomly, one woman gets her tits and bush out. It's quite explicit.
I know, right?
For one scene. And then one, it seems like one character specifically, that one of the henchmen, swears his goddamn head off in such a weird way where he's like, all right, you've had your fun now, motherfucker. Like, yeah. He emphasizes every fuck, and it's like he's the only character that does swear.
It's almost like the character is a five-year-old that's heard the word fuck for the first time and wants to say it all the fucking time, the silly fucking fuck. And it's like, it just feel like they've just shoehorned it in. And the gore is unnecessary as well for the plot line. The plot line isn't anything shy of, well, a TV pilot for a superhero.
Yeah, I think they shot themselves in the foot by doing that. Maybe they added it because they thought that's what their market, their, you know, Full Moon fan base would like, but it's not throughout the whole thing. It's not like a violent R-rated version of Doctor Strange. It's just... No. There's just moments of it there, and it stands out. And it's like, if you just got rid of that, you could sell this to kids.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely right. It's a nice, simple superhero plot that they've just kind of dumped a load of gore and tits and swearing into that was completely unnecessary.
But yeah, I mean, if you want to get into like some of the, you know, the superhero stuff in this, you know what I liked about this compared to the other Doctor Strange?
Go on.
You get straight into it. Doctor Strange is Doctor Strange. He is the Sorcerer Supreme, or whatever you want to call it. The Magician Mega.
And that's why it feels more like a TV pilot.
Yeah, I always like to think of what other movies are coming out around this time, especially for like lower budget films like this, because they're always inevitably trying to rip off what's popular. And some of the 90s movies around this time, some of them might have been after or before, but you've got like Batman and Blade, and those movies as well. They're not big origin stories. You just start the film and they're superheroes. That's it. You just get straight into it.
Maybe that's why they wanted to make it R-rated, because Blade had been successful.
And Batman is kind of, you know, dark and gritty, I guess.
True. True. I'll tell you what it did remind me of. Highlander.
Yeah.
Cabal is like the fucking Kurgan.
God, yeah, and that was late 80s. So, yeah, maybe they were... I definitely get a sense that they might have been ripping that off a little bit. And you get that sense of these ancient beings that have come back for, combat.
I mean, it wasn't as good as Highlander. I won't have a bad word about Highlander, particularly Highlander 2. I think my second favourite film scene of all time is in Highlander 2.
Which also revealed they were aliens.
Yes, that's right. The scene on the train... is just magnificent. Absolutely magnificent. Second favourite film scene of all time.
I always like the one where Sean Connery sacrificed himself to a giant industrial fan.
Oh, Sean Connery. But we're not talking about Highlander.
Well, yeah, speaking of influences and stuff, I mentioned talking about Jeffrey Combs' acting in this. I feel like this Doctor Strange or Dr. Mordred is quite inspired by the Michael Keaton Batman. You get that sense where you see him in his smoking jacket in his study, like pensively staring. And, you know, Jeffrey Combs is a lot, you know, he can't really hide the fact that he's just kind of like this nice Jeffrey little Coombs. Nerd. Yeah. It's not as intimidating as Michael Keaton managed to do it, but you get that sense.
I would like his home.
Oh, it's a very nice home, yeah.
It's amazing. They must have put a lot of their budget into that because it looks so cool.
Some of the set decoration throughout this movie is really impressive. Like when you go to the, I forget what it's called, they go to this special plane of magicness where it's like this big castle, which was a prison for a cabal, and it's on an asteroid in like space. And it's very cool. Like the miniature of the castle looks really cool. And then you get these pretty cool, like, medium far shots of them standing amidst, like, the ruins and stuff. And, like, it's all superimposed in, but it's quite well done.
I agree. And I hate to say it, but I did enjoy this more than 1978 Doctor Strange.
It is weird. And I guess they did let the rights lapse. But, yeah, this is a decent Marvel movie of this era. It's quite fun. And yeah, I do love the charm of the 90s-ness in this as well. Like, again, of the set decoration. I love his home. I love the giant wall of the map of the world. And he has his box of scrolls and stuff. It all feels very lived in, doesn't it? How the way he just opens that box and he has all the scrolls. And it's like, they don't explain what it is, but you just, you know, it's magic stuff that helps him do his job.
Yeah, and that's it. That's enough for a pilot.
And then you also get that weird contrast where he has a big wall of TV screens and he just videotapes crime reports of the news. And he has a massive wall of shelves of VHS tapes. And it's like, you've got all this access to magic. Is there no other way you can do this?
You got to remember in 1992, VHS tapes were kind of magical.
They were, I guess, yeah.
Yeah, the VHS tapes is kind of charming in a retro way. You know, we all go, lol, VHS. But they were cool at the time.
Yeah, it was as the Highlander says, it's a kind of magic.
And quite. What I would say is that it did highlight to me just the strength of the effects in the Doctor Strange film. Watching these two in close proximity, Dr. Mordred's effects were quite similar to Doctor Strange. And I think that's a credit to Doctor Strange that I couldn't really not mention.
Yeah. Although I would have liked to see the Doctor Strange pilot try the dinosaurs.
True. The dinosaurs were brilliant. They were very, very cool. Again, I think Doctor Strange's house and the dinosaurs is where the money went.
That's something as well I was going to bring up, like the pacing and the story in this. You mentioned the house. Like, we talked about how would Doctor Strange handle the plot lines because it's quite a messy film structurally. This film, though at a breakneck pace, I feel has genuine sequences of character stuff. Like, you really get an introduction to Dr. Mordred as a character. You really get an introduction to the character of Sam and her subplot with the police stuff. And
yes,
it builds the plot really quite well, and there are sequences and stuff. I mean, the villain plot is a little undercooked. He's just evil.
Yeah, I think Sam is a noticeable progression from Clea. I would say she's been promoted to a protagonist rather than a supporting character here. She's much more interesting and actually a pretty cool character compared to the way women were treated in the 1978 film.
Yeah, she really has her own arc in this, like her own motivations. Yeah. She wants to become a real police officer with a badge and, you know, on the force. Whereas at the moment, she's just a consultant and everyone kind of looks down on her.
Yeah, that's definitely a strength of the film. And Full Moon aren't normally that good on that kind of thing. So this is this is nice to see as well.
Yeah, amazing, actually, really. I mean, you get that random woman naked, but they don't exploit the main character of Sam at all, really.
No.
They really let her just be positive and progressive, which is nice.
So this was a massive surprise to me how good this was. I was expecting pure tap, borderline unwatchable, and I'm disappointed there isn't a follow-up. I would love to see more, if I'm being honest.
Yeah, as we said, it really sets up these characters of Sam, more than to the Doctor Strange show, it really sets up these characters of Sam and Dr. Mordred, and more so than the medical angle of Doctor Strange, it really sets up this clear angle of solving police cases, but with a supernatural angle.
Yeah, and I would also argue it's even more like Doctor Who, in as much as he's a very, very old alien with a young human companion. But I like Doctor Who.
And again, yeah, Combs really does a fantastic job at being charming and being kind of weird and stuff. And that's a thing compared to Doctor Strange's. I mean, Doctor Strange's character is quite a ladies' man, you know, like Iron Man was. So, you know, it makes sense that he's more confident and brash with women. But I really love how demure Mordred is in this. How his version of flirting with Sam is like, you can come around anytime and look at these books. Like, it's kind of flirtatious, but it's also like, he wants to get to know her. It's nice.
And he's a nerd.
Yeah, I mean, he's also a landlord, but...
Yeah, if someone said to me, you can come over and read my books, I would be like, oh, brilliant, I love books. I wouldn't clock that it was flirting because I'm not very bright on that sort of thing. So it really kind of hit a nerve with me, in as much as, oh dear, he's as awkward with as attracted to as I am.
Yeah, and that follows up at the ending. You get a sense that they're friends, but they could be more than friends. It's a nice little placement at where they are. They don't just kiss and then suddenly they're lovers.
Mm. Dev, do you want to come round and have a look at my books?
Oh.
I don't have anything more to say about this. Is there anything else you want to say about this book?
I love the side character of Gunnar, his weird little dwarven friend in space.
Again, very full moon.
Such a weird character, and he has like a grenade launcher that shoots lasers. Just don't explain any of it. There he is. And he's fighting off like a sewer hatch with loads of little demons in it. Don't really explain what they are.
They only had 74 minutes, Dev.
It is funny how fast some of the plot lines in this.
Yeah, why wasn't this film longer? They could have expanded that.
I feel there are scenes missing because there is a bit where they see the woman get murdered. A woman gets murdered and she has like a druid rune burnt onto her. And so Sam is like, I've met this guy who knows all about old occult stuff. Yeah, we can get his help. And then the next scene, it's like Dr. Mordred is suddenly being arrested on suspicion of murder. And he's just there, like in the jail. And it's such a jump of events that suddenly everyone thinks he's guilty.
Yeah, you're right. I don't have anything to add, but you are right. And that when you think that they did truncate it to 74 minutes, why wasn't there a little bit more in there? Although we complained about how the plot was slow in the last film. So
true.
Nothing pleases us, Dev.
I think we've both been quite pleased by this Mordred film.
Yeah. Out of the two, I was pleasantly surprised by this one.
It's really quite enjoyable, especially compared to some of the Marvel films that were coming out around this time, like the Captain America films, or was the Fantastic Four thing around? It was near the 90s, wasn't it?
The one that was never supposed to be released, but everyone lols at it on YouTube.
Yeah, so there were some diabolical attempts, and Full Moon didn't even have the rights anymore, and yet they were like, hey, this is a pretty solid script, we've got some actors already attached, let's just go ahead and make it. And it's pretty fun.
It's also quite naughty, which I approve of.
Hey, Sam Raimi, if you're listening, I know you've already wrapped up and everything, but I know there's reshoots happening. In some of those reshoots, if you're opening up the multiverse, just chuck in Dr. Mordred, throw him in there for a cameo.
Oh, that'd be amazing. It's not gonna happen. Dave, it's been loads of fun talking tap with you. It always is. Where can people find you on the internet?
People can find me over on Twitter, at Absolute Travesty. I don't really do much on there, but I have a link tree, so you can find out where else I am. You can also find me on the We Made This Network. I chat all sorts of nonsense. I was going to say all sorts of tat, but it's not always tat. It's rarely actually tat. I chat nonsense with Mark, with Chucky Vision, and that's been a great, just a great experience. And you can catch us every month on there. I also have another podcast on the We Made This Network, Forever Friday, that I was going to say went on hiatus, but it was the holidays. It was Christmas, so I didn't make anything during then, but that's going to be coming back. And that talks about the Friday the 13th movies. So it's all sort of similar, you know, fun, enjoyable tap talk, if you enjoy this.
Yeah, and if you're looking for me, obviously I'm on Chucky Vision 2. If you like the Chucky franchise, check that out. I also do a podcast about kids' TV called Right in the Childhood, and a podcast about Red Dwarf called Shipwrecked and Comatose. Wherever you're listening to Podcast 616, if you search for them in your search bar, you will find all the podcasts we've talked about today. So thank you for joining us for another episode of Podcast 616. And remember that we are part of the We Made This Podcast Network. Please subscribe to us and give us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. You can also do that on Spotify, I recently discovered as well. 5 stars, please. Don't bother to rate us if it's not 5 stars. That'd be cool. And if you do want to help out our network, please consider supporting us on our Patreon. If you want to do that, it's patreon.com/WeMadeThis. And Marvel Tat is not all that we're discussing on We Made This. So to give you a taste of the other shows that we've got for you, please carry on listening. We've got some trailers for you at the end. We'll see you next time on Podcast 616. And until then, even when the content is questionable, make mine Marvel.
Elsewhere on We Made This.
The TARDIS crew. A Doctor Who podcast.
Half of your audience punches the air and goes, yeah, he's going to do it. And the other half goes, that pretentious moron. I'm going to go with Ghostlight. It has to be Ghost. Ghostlight is the episode of the Cartman McCoy era that like most embodies absolutely everything that I love about this era today.
Yeah, it's a big story and it's a bit of a decisive one as well. Yeah, is it brilliant? Is it pretentious? Is it both? I mean, that's what I love about Ghostlight.
Does it make any sense? That's the question.
I genuinely did not expect that answer. So I thought you were just going to be really normie and go Remembrance or Fenric or something. And then I hear Ghostlight, I'm like, yeah, okay. Yeah. I mean, it's certainly probably the most unique story of the era.
Pick a disc.
From a sort of Japanese perspective, he has sort of what you would consider in America as like almost like an Old West vibe. It's not, you know, one-to-one because Old West is kind of hokey, but it's all of these musical styles like enka and like piano jazz, like piano bar, piano lounge jazz, that are sort of reminiscent of like gangsters or like old type, like old timey yakuza or old politician types. And so it kind of like evokes that vibe. And if you watch any amount of Japanese film that wants to be overt about, you know, its characters, you'll kind of see those themes like reappearing.
Shipwrecked and Comatose. A Red Dwarf podcast.
This does have another one of my favourite lines. And I'm pretty sure you can both guess what it is. You want to squeeze my buttocks together to make one juicy giant peach. And I have never been brave enough to squeeze anyone's buttocks together to make a juicy giant peach. Have either of you ever squeezed someone's buttock together to make a juicy giant peach?
No.
No comment.
Check out all of these shows and more on the We Made This Podcast Network.